Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. Warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. I've got, as usual, a fantastic show lined up for you. I know you're going to really love this first hour in particular. Dr. Glenn Pickering has returned to the studio, and you know that whenever he comes in, you walk away with all kinds of stuff, all kinds of goodies in a brown paper bag that you take home, and you can start working on your relationship. Now, tomorrow, love is in the air today, because tomorrow's Valentine's Day, and there are if your relationship is going good, we want to find out why. And if it's not going good, we want to find out why. So we're going to be asking all kinds of questions and digging into both reasons. If you don't know this, there's a good chance you've been playing a game called Tag and you didn't even know it. And it's kind of based on a power of about six lies. And if you remember that game of Tag when you were a kid, you're on the playground and somebody's it, and your job is to not become it. So you have to stay away from that person who is it so you don't get it, right? And then you've got no teammates and everyone you can't trust and you walk on eggshells. That's kind of what Tag is. And it's built on six big lies that relationships have. And you're playing Tag whether you know it or not. I'm going to ask Glenn to just refresh our memories a little bit on the game of Tag. And I'm also going to find out exactly if we're doing things well, what we're doing well, and if we're not doing things well, how we can do things better. That's all ahead. Coming up on this hour, if you have questions, and I know you're going to, you can text me, 877-933-2484, or you can call 877-933-2484. And also, you can email me if you're more comfortable doing that. That would be bill@myfaithradio.com. Let's take a break and then get Dr. Glenn Pickering on the show.
Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. February marks our 70th anniversary as a ministry. And has happened over those 70 years, we've made changes in our programming. And this month brings several key changes. For example, Carmen LaBerge moves to mornings. The program Walk in the Word has been discontinued, so we're adding several new teaching programs in those time slots. And Susie Larson returns to Faith Radio during the middays to challenge us all to a deep and active walk of faith. Our programs and hosts change, but the message remains the same. Jesus is the hope of the world, and we want you to know him. Now, God has been faithful to this ministry, and we're grateful for the legacy of lives changed and hope restored through the daily teaching and talk on Faith Radio. Today, God's Word is still proclaimed with clarity, thanks to thousands of faithful listeners providing support. But your partnership is still needed for the work ahead. You can join us today with a gift at myfaithradio.com or by calling 877-93-FAITH.
Oh, we're going to have a lot of fun this hour. We're going to talk about relationships as love is in the air with Valentine's Day tomorrow. In studio, Dr. Glenn Pickering. His website is Glenn Pickering, GlennPickering, just like it sounds, glennpickering.com. And he is an engineer, and then he is a pastor, and then he is a PhD psychologist. And one of these days, I think he's going to run off and join the circus. I don't know.
I thought that's what this was.
Well, my show's the circus now. All right. So, Glenn, always nice to have you back in the studio.
Thanks.
And when we talk about the game of Tag, and we talk about the ways in which we've got our side of the street that we have to, pay attention to in every relationship. You always say it's 50-50.
Yep, it is. And thank you. That's a great intro. And I do want to talk about the game of Tag, but first I just want to jump on that 50-50 thing you said, because it's so powerful. And I just know, so Valentine's is coming up, and some people are thinking, oh, this is going to be so great. I have this person in my life I love. This is going to be great. And there are some people thinking, oh, no, it's Valentine's. It just reminds me that this relationship I'm in isn't working right, or I don't have the person in my life that I want, or I have a relationship with my friend or my kid that's not really going great. And so for some people, it's a real celebration time. And for some people, it's a sort of sad time. And I think it's important in either direction to ask myself, okay, if my relationships are going well, What am I doing that helps with that? And if my relationships aren't going well, what am I doing that contributes to that? Now, and here's how it plays into the game of tag that you just talked about. In the game of tag, which I'm just have become convicted is the base problem in every relationship that's not working right. We're always worried about being it. We don't want things to be our fault. And so anytime there's a problem, we just ask ourselves this really, really unhelpful question, whose fault is it? So instead of doing what Jesus says we should do, which is, you know, not look at the speck in our brother's or sister's eye, but instead see the log in our own eye, we want to blame, we want to know whose fault is it? And it's so important that we break out of that really, really unhelpful, un-Christ-like question, and instead ask ourselves three related questions. One, if there are patterns in our relationship, good or bad, things that are going well, things that are not, what is that pattern? Second, what's my half of that pattern? What do I contribute to that? And third, how do I learn from that to either keep doing something good or to change something that I'm doing that's not so good? So the way to break out of the game of tag where we're always trying to blame somebody or not be it ourselves is we just ask ourselves that question, what am I contributing to this relationship, good or bad? So I think, right, that's where the 50-50 rule comes in for me, Bill, mm-hmm. that you were talking about. Yeah. I just want to say, what's my half of whatever is either working or not working?
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a great place to start, Glenn. I know there's going to be people that are going to take offense to that.
Right.
Because they're in relationships where my husband drinks too much and looks at porn, and you're telling me half of it's my fault.
Yep, absolutely. You're responsible for their behavior. No, I'm just kidding. I just think it's just interesting to me. Like, somebody might say to me, well, Glenn, everywhere I go, everybody just expects me to take care of everything. I just hate that. That's a problem that everybody else has. They expect me to take care of everything. I think, okay, it's entirely possible you do have some people in your life who kind of expect you to take care of everything. That's their half. And I'm still going to ask the gentle question, what's your half of that? Maybe you actually like being in control, and everybody in your life knows that, so they just let you do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when they have tried to help, you've been really critical, they feel like, oh, they just can't do it good enough, and so they kind of quit helping. I mean, I just really need to ask myself, what is it that I might be doing that contributes to this pattern that I'm seeing, good or bad?
Mm-hmm. There's a line out of your book, Tag, Glenn, which I've memorized, and I think the line is this. I hope I have it right. What is it about my behavior right. that contributes to our issues?
Nice. I
now,
love
if you,
it.
If you said that to someone, they mm-hmm. would. I think you'd have their attention.
I would have their attention, good or bad, as you say. Mm-hmm. Some people would think, oh, that's such a helpful question. Mm-hmm. Some people will be mad because they will hear that as me blaming them for the whole problem. But let me come back to that quote Jesus has. You know, mostly if people do quote that saying, you know, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye or sister's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye.
Mm-hmm.
They stop the quote there. But that's not where the saying ends. Jesus says, and once you've taken the log out of your own eye, you can talk to your brother or sister about the speck in their eye. So it's not that I'm supposed to take that as, oh, so now the whole problem is my problem. It's like, no. I just need to make sure I'm addressing my half of that problem first. That gives me the credibility then to ask my brother or sister to also address their half of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm asking them to do something, you know, address their half of that problem that I myself and I'm willing to do. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I have no credibility at that point.
Yeah, but even when you start talking about things like maybe you're doing it because we know that's what you want to do because you're right. a controlling person, even when you deal with that level of truthfulness, that can make people squirm.
Oh, sure. And I promise you, you know, I do a lot of marriage counseling in my practice, which is in Eden Prairies, you know.
Eden Prairie, Minnesota, you mean?
Yeah, just kidding.
Okay. No, you just moved. But that's why I think you're used to saying Eden Prairie now because you were in a different location. But it's at glennpickering.com where you go for more information on that. There's a shameless plug. All right.
That's
Let's pick up where we last
no
left
shame
off.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, yes. So I do a lot of marriage counseling. And when I talk about 50-50, it's entirely possible that this is going to happen. The person who has been acting or feeling like the whole thing is their fault is going to think, oh, thank goodness. The person who's been thinking, yeah, it's your fault, not mine, is going to think I'm being mean to them.
Right.
And is going to be real upset by me. And they're going to hear me as saying the problem is their problem. And it's so important to understand. We have to break out of that childish black and white thinking where the problem is either my fault or your fault. And instead think in that adult Christ-like way that says, no. We each have a part of this. And we each need to take responsibility for our part, mm-hmm. whatever that looks
Maybe I'm just offended by the 50-50 remark, Glenn. Maybe I'm going, all right, I'll do the percentages, but it's 80-20. It's not 50-50.
Right. Now, here's the really cool thing.
So defend that, if you would.
I so will. Thank you. Love to. It's one of my favorite topics. Here's what I know. Oftentimes people will say, well, then maybe I do contribute, but it's not 50-50. Just like you said, maybe it's 95-5. Uh-huh. But here's what I know. Especially in marriages, but it's true in friendships too. We get in relationships with people who have very similar strengths to ours and the exact flip side of our weakness. So if I'm a guy, for example, who's incredibly funny, really good looking, serious about my faith and too controlling, uh-huh. just for example,
yeah.
I'm going to marry a gal who's really, really funny, very good looking, serious about her faith and too passive. So we're going to match up on all of our strengths. And our weakness is going to be the flip side of each other.
Okay.
Because if I'm real controlling, am I going to marry another controlling person?
No.
I can only marry someone who kind of wants somebody to boss them around. And the flip side is also true. Is that passive person going to want to marry somebody else who's passive? And now they feel like, oh, crap, I have to make all the decisions. I don't want to do that. No, they're going to marry someone who tells them what to do.
Right.
So it's important to understand it's exactly 50-50 for this reason. We have exactly the same problem, just the flip side of the same one. Which is why it's not even 60-40. It is literally 50-50.
Hmm. All right. We're going to take a little break. If you have a question about a relationship, maybe you're stuck. Maybe you're in a place where you just don't know what to do.
Or maybe you don't know where your 50 is.
Maybe you don't know where your 50 is. And right now you've heard this 50-50 thing and you're just fuming mad. And you want to call and get something off your chest. Let's do it now. 877-933-2484. That's the number. And you can also text me a question. You can remain anonymous if you like. Again, the number, 877-933-2484. Or Bill at MyFaithRadio.com will do it. Be back in a minute. Thank you for joining me today. I have got Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio. We're talking about relationships as love is in the air with Valentine's Day tomorrow. And if you are in a good relationship, you might want to be asking yourself, what am I doing right? This is good. And if you're in a one that's not so good, you might ask yourself, what am I doing wrong? And I don't know why my voice went up both times, but anyway. So Glenn, you talk about these people will have the opposite quality when it comes
right.
to... If you're a controlling person, you look for a person who's passive, right?
Right.
So is that a good place? Is that a good way to have a relationship, or is that trouble?
Well, it's trouble if you don't do anything about it, and here's what I mean. I really think, you know, God is always interested in transforming our lives from the inside out. And I think, see, the great thing, if I quit judging the other person, you know, when Paul says, why do you judge your brother or your sister when you have exactly the same flaws they do, really? So mm-hmm. where do you get off judging them? Once we realize, oh, I get it. I don't have to sit in judgment of you. You have exactly the same struggle as I do, except just the flip side of the same thing. I actually get that. Now, so first of all, once we get that, it helps us have compassion instead of judgment on that other person. And second, everything the other person does to change what they're doing then makes it easier for me to change what I need to work on. So, for example, let's say just hypothetically that I used to be too controlling. I know it's hard to believe, but we'll just make that up.
Okay.
So everything, when I get that and I think, okay, I need to quit bossing people around. I need to ask more questions. I need to let people be on my team. I need to ask other people what they think. I need to take other people into consideration. So I start asking Gwen instead of just telling her what to do. I start asking her opinion, seeing what she wants, and she can tell I'm actually serious. I really want to know. I'm trying to take her feedback seriously. Well, it's going to make it easier than for her to work on her half, which is she has to get better at speaking up, at saying what she thinks, at voicing her opinion. Well, if I'm asking her, it makes it easier for her to do that. So everything I do to work on my stuff makes it easier for Gwen to work on her stuff. And the flip side is just as true. So let's say Gwen starts speaking up, having opinions, showing me she's not just a weak doormat and that I'm in this all by myself and I have to do everything, but I can see, oh, actually, she is stronger than I thought. She could be a teammate. It's going to be easier for me to start letting go of control, trusting that she could be on my team, that she's strong enough to do it. And so each of us, if we get better at our half of that 50, makes it easier for the other person to do their part.
Okay.
And so if we get it right, we each literally help each other transform into our best selves.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, I want to return to 50-50, if you don't mind. My sister Lynn just texted me and said, 50-50, question mark, question mark. I don't think she's getting it. So maybe you can, frame this one more time, because right. I think everybody goes, well, look, I do this well, or this person is, you know, creating trouble because of this quality in their life, and I'm not taking 50% responsibility for that.
No, we don't take 50% responsibility for their behavior. We take 50% of responsibility for our part of that interaction pattern.
Okay.
So this is a ridiculously simplistic story, so I'll just, I mean, it's crazy. But let's say I complain that my wife's an alcoholic, and I just hate that she's an alcoholic, and every day I stop at the store and buy some beer for her on the way home.
Okay.
Or maybe I get a lot of sympathy from other people complaining about how tough my life is because Gwen's such an alcoholic. Everybody feels bad for me and feels like I'm such a martyr. They think I'm so great. See, I'm getting something out of that weird little dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm with somebody who literally can't run their own life, then I kind of have to run my life and theirs. And I will complain about it the whole time. But see, if I'm actually a person who likes being in control, I will marry somebody like that because I get to run my life and theirs.
Mm. Okay, I just grunted. I didn't even say a word. I just grunted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Grunted like I get it, maybe?
Yeah, like I might get it.
Uh-huh.
I'm just curious about conflict and things that are left unresolved. Now, I would imagine when people come into your office, Glenn, and they have a marital issue,
right.
And some of these issues have been unresolved for
a very long time.
So if that thing's been festering for 10, 15, 20 years,
right.
How do you start to unearth those and make it work?
I just told him to stop doing it.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
I can do that. Stop it.
Did you see the Bob Newhart?
Oh, I love
clip?
That.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Just
no comments. Right. It's hilarious.
That'd be $5, please.
Yeah. I don't make change.
I don't make change. So let's say there is that pattern that's been going on for a long time, and they can see that there's a pattern. I promise you, I'm relieved. I'm relieved that they can tell what the pattern is, because it's easy for people to say, no, there's just weird random stuff that happens all the time. Well, that's not true. These things happen, the arguments you have, the conversations you have go in very predictable ways. And once you get that, you can sort of see how you might break it. And I'm glad that they come in and they're sick of that pattern, because until we're sick of it, we keep doing it. But when people say, Glenn, we can't do this one more day, and I think they think I'm going to be worried or scared, I think, oh, great, I'm so glad that you know that. Let me teach you a way better way. And mm-hmm. I'm going to teach them a way better way to address that topic where everybody feels heard and everybody feels cared for. And they're going to say, oh, Glenn, this is way too easy. This is way too simple. I think, oh, great. We must be doing it right then. Because if I get it right, I just do the simple stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do we overcomplicate stuff?
Oh, my goodness sakes. Let's say I did something that hurt your feelings. Now, if I play tag and you say to me, hey, Glenn, you kind of hurt my feelings. I got to go on and on. I got to come up with 8 excuses. Well, it's not really my fault. Or you should know I really cared. Or I just made a mistake. Or blah, blah. Well, you're too sensitive. Yada, yada, yada. We could have a really icky conversation. You could get all defensive. I could get all defensive. Or I could just say, I'm really sorry. And then we're kind of done. I mean, the right way is literally always 100 times simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I would agree with that. All right, here's a question that's come in. I'm willing to own my 50%, but when I try to talk about it with my spouse, he jumps on my faults. Ouch. What do I do to argue better? I just feel devastated when he calls it all my fault.
Then you say very, very gently, "Hon, I clearly see the half of that that's my fault. I totally get that, and I own that. What do you see as being your half of that pattern?"
This is not going to go well.
No, it's not. But but they're going to react exactly the same way you did with that deer in the headlights look, which I promise you is 100 times better than the old argument we would have had then. So
okay.
I'm not going to defend myself. I'm just going to say, you're right. Half of that is my fault. I totally get it. I own that. I'm going to work on my half. What do you see as your half?
Hmm. Okay.
No, it's all you, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I really do get what my part of that is. I totally get it. And I just need to know what you're willing to do about your part and if you're willing to own that. And I'm not going to waver from that question.
Mm.
Now, the reason it has worked for him in the past is because you've been too easy to play and he starts saying it's all your fault and you get all defensive and that's what he wants. So I want you to not go there.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to think, yep, I'm not defending myself. I totally get it. I claim my half. And I just want to know if you can tell what your half is.
It's good. Here's another question. Glenn, what do you do when you have tried to do everything in your power to change your own bad patterns, let God soften your heart, etc., but your spouse absolutely refuses to address their problems and therefore makes the marriage painful and connecting difficult?
Sometimes that's true. And so if that is what has happened, you have my total compassion. What I often say, though, is when somebody says, I've done everything I can, how can I make them do their part? I will see that they don't actually ask the other person to do their part. They sort of demand that the other person do their part, and they come across in a way that's way more strident than they actually want to be. And that just gets the other person all defensive. So
I want cooperation, though. If I'm going to do my 50%, it's only fair you do yours.
Right, but see, if I force you, that's not really cooperation, is
it? Not forcing. I'm just trying to be, let's be fair.
Yes. Now, I just want you to just play back that sentence you said to me a moment ago.
All right.
And ask me, and just tell me how that sounded.
I just want to be fair.
Uh-huh, right.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I know. You're really good. It's almost scary. Now, you should be on the stage or something.
Yeah.
So I just want you to hear, see, that voice doesn't sound like I'm inviting you on my team.
No, I'm scolding you.
Yeah, voice just sounds like you're bad.
But I'm flooded.
I'm proved to you that I'm
bad. Slack. I'm a little upset right now.
Uh-huh. Then go off in the corner until you're not.
Well, then I'm off in the corner for about 6 months.
Well, you might be there for a little bit, but it won't be 6 months, I promise you that. You'll get hungry eventually.
Yeah, but let's say I go to the corner and I've calmed down and then I come back and then the other person's mad.
Then I say, hey, I get that I came across too harsh. I apologize for being too harsh. I really do, though, want to be a team about this. And we really do have to both figure out how are we going to do how are we each going to do our half differently. I really want to be on your team about that. So they can really tell they're being invited onto a team, not judged for the mistakes they've made.
Mm.
And if we're not careful, it will sound so much like the judgment piece that all that happens is they'll just get triggered and defensive. And the fact that the stuff we're saying is actually true won't even matter.
Yeah, so if you're on the team, or if you're on eggshells, you never know if you're going to be on the team or not.
Right, exactly. Or if you're just going to get judged the next thing you do wrong. So it's really important to think, okay, God calls us onto the team. Jesus calls us onto the team. We're supposed to live in community. We need to call each other on the team. And so if I really, really want my spouse's relationship with me to be different, then first of all, I need to get my mind right. And I need to pray however long I need to pray to make sure I'm coming to my spouse and saying, I really, really would want us to be more connected. And I really, really want us to be a team about that. And I have to be clear in my own mind that that's what I'm asking for.
All right. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. We're going to take a little break, but we do invite your questions, 877-933-2484. That also works as a text, 877-93-FAITH, or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. We'd love to hear your voice on the studio line. If you have a question, know that you can remain anonymous, of course. But if you have a relationship concern or issue or problem or something that's been unresolved for a long time, and you would like some great counsel, great godly counsel, 877-933-2484. We'll take a short break and be back in about 3 minutes. Welcome back. I love when I have Glenn on the program because we get into such interesting discussions and the listeners have so many great questions. We're going to get to them in just a minute. Glenn, what if someone in the relationship does not want to participate at the level that you would like them to?
Sometimes people say, well, Glenn, that other person's not changing as fast as I want them to. And I think gently, of course they're not. Not if they're actually doing the work. And here's what I mean. I am so impatient, I could smack my own self up the head sometimes. I'm so impatient.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I see. Everything that God creates, birds, earth, the grass, us, doesn't matter, has two things in common. And those two things are that they change gradually. So if somebody's on a godly path with me, I need to know, and it really is a godly path, they really are being changed from the inside out, that I'm going to see them change gradually. And the part of my little ego that wants things when I want things, that wants things right now, da-da-da-da-da, I think I just need to understand and please understand, all of you who are listening, I'm incredibly impatient, so I literally have to work on this one myself every day, that what God does is like he's trying to turn me into an oak tree, not a weed. And the weeds are fast, but they're not deep-rooted, and they don't last very long. And an oak tree is really, really solid because it's grounded all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I need to understand then is that if I'm working on my stuff, it's going to be a gradual process. If my partner's working on their stuff, it's going to be a gradual process. We can support each other. We can pray for each other. That will help speed it up a little bit. But it will be a one-step-at-a-time process because as nearly as I can tell, that's how God actually does everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Glenn, here's another listener says, my husband is apologetic when he messes up, and I always forgive him. I have asked the Lord to soften my heart, and he has, and I'm grateful for that. My only frustration is I don't see my husband growing as fast as I desire him to in his anger, rude words when he gets upset or aggravated. Any advice?
Yeah, leave the room.
Okay.
So what I'm thinking is this. I get that, and I talk to all of my clients about this, about being what I call a second responder, because I get all of us when we get triggered. If we're not careful, we literally say the first words that come to our head. But I've really, really come to understand in times of conflict, because we're all fallen, and so we play the game of tag whenever we're not actually mindful. If I'm worried or upset or hurt or scared, the first words out of my mouth will be words I wish I hadn't said. Literally. So anytime I'm in a conflict and somebody says something, if you are on TV, you'd see me do this. I'm going to nod my head. Think carefully, give me and God 3 or 4 seconds to come up with an answer that I'd actually want to say, and then I'm going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say to that person who says those wrong words, it's not that you need to behave differently. It's that you need to give yourself a chance to actually think before you speak. And it takes 4 seconds to just make sure that what you're saying is actually what you want to be saying. Now, and you might need to take a time out to do it, and here's what I mean. There's a fascinating study done a few years ago now that confirms so much of what I've seen in my practice, that all of us, when we have adrenaline going through our brain, going through our body, the prefrontal cortex part of our brain stops working, basically. And there's a reason for that. You know, if you think back to the olden days, and I'm, you know, being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, I'm not going to be thinking to myself, is this the Asian saber-toothed tiger or the African saber-toothed tiger? I've heard the African one has one additional tooth. Which one is this? I don't have time for that, right? I want every bit of energy in my body to either be going to my muscles or to the part of my brain that moves my muscles, period. I will think about what happened later and probably want to talk incessantly about it, but at the time, I'm literally not thinking. So if two people get in an argument and a little bit of adrenaline starts kicking in, we all need to understand, at that moment, we literally stop thinking. So all the things we will now say under that situation are the things we can literally say without thinking. And trust me, those aren't the kind of things any of us actually want to say. So if we get into that spot, then I ask people to take what I call a gracious time out, which is to say, we're just going to stop right here for a minute, just long enough for the adrenaline to wear off.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to come back to this conversation. Now, here's what most people won't tell you, but I will, because it's important. Usually people take a time out, they go off to the corner maybe, or they go walking on the block, or whatever it takes to wear off that adrenaline. And all they're doing is rehearsing their part of the argument that was happening. But see, that's why there's an argument, is each person was just trying to make their point and not listening to the other ones. So if you're going to take a time out, those 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, long enough for the adrenaline to wear off, I don't want you to spend that time rehearsing your own argument. You've said that one out loud 10 times already.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to just take those 2 or 3 or 4 minutes and think, what was my honey trying to say to me?
Well, that would be productive, though.
It's super productive. And then when we come back from the timeout, instead of repeating what we said before, we come back saying, hon, I know I probably wasn't listening very well. I think you were just trying to say this. And I'm going to summarize what I thought Gwen was trying to say in one sentence to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then she will do the same, of course. And see, in that moment, we literally stopped that argument. Now, we're not yelling. Nobody's saying bad things. We stopped. We could feel that adrenaline kicking in, so we say, we got to take a break. Because we know bad things are going to come out of our mouth. When, you know, it says in James that the tongue can be a fire, I think, right, the same tongue that praises God, you know, will destroy my relationships to the ground if I'm not careful.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to recognize when the adrenaline kicks in, take a break, just long enough for the adrenaline to wear off. So if we say take a break, that doesn't mean we're not going to talk about this anymore today. It means give me 3 minutes. Now, Gwen's ADHD, so she likes to walk around to wear off the adrenaline. you know, I'm autistic, so I sit in a corner quietly by myself.
Mm-hmm. Good combo.
And let the adrenaline wear off.
Yeah.
So we each kind of do it our way.
Works.
And then we come back, and we have to come back ready to summarize, not what we said, because we've said that already.
Mm-hmm.
We have to come back ready to summarize what the other one said.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great
and then we, then we don't have those arguments.
Yeah. Another question here, Glenn. When partner one has simply fallen out of love with partner two, and the other partner, number two, can't accept it and wants to continue to work on it, how does partner one handle it?
Partner one needs to understand you're only out of love because you're blind to their 90%, and you need to start seeing them again. Here's what I mean. I'm a big believer in what I call the 90-10 rule. I should be a big believer in it because I made it up. But it's still true. That we all do stuff right about 90% of the time. We all mess up 10%, which is kind of how it goes. And when we first meet somebody and we fall in love with them, we see their 90%. And sometimes people say, well, Glenn, you know how it is at first. You fall in love, but that's not reality. And then later on, reality sets in. And I think, you don't get it. The way we see that person at first, we see everything about them that's great and wonderful and perfect, is the way God sees them. That's not a false. That's what's reality. Later on, if I start getting bitter or resentful, I just look at them and I don't see their 90. I just see all the things I'm resentful about, and I start to think that's who they are, but it's not. So when somebody says, I fell out of love, I think, right, because the person you don't love isn't actually real. It's this list of resentments that you have built up in your head that you see when you look at them. And it's your job to kind of come back and think, okay, what's great about this person, and how can I start literally watching for that and encouraging that 90%? And I promise you, you will find out just how fast you can fall back in love.
Mm-hmm. There's another question here, Glenn. I have heard there's three things you need to learn as a husband. Yes, dear, it was my fault, and I'm sorry. I try to assess my own faults and responsibilities in most situations. This has served me well in relationships. There have been occasions where people have taken advantage of that. Is it wrong to end a relationship with a friend who betrays your trust? How far must we go towards reconciliation?
Well, just so you know, when I hear somebody say a joke like that, yes, dear, it's my fault, and blah, 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 I'm mm-hmm. going to throw up. So that's never helpful.
Okay.
I need to say what my half of that was. Because if I act like, oh, you're right, it's all your fault, you're terrible, or it's all my fault, I'm terrible, well, then this learning thing that's supposed to happen, where we both figure out what our part is, do our part differently, become better people, never happens. So I'm literally at that moment an enemy of transformation. All I do is make sure the same old thing just keeps on happening. I promise you, that is not a godly path, which is why it makes me want to throw up.
Hmm.
What was the second half of the question?
Is it wrong to end a relationship with a friend who betrays your trust? How far must we go towards reconciliation?
We can only go as far as the other one will. So there are two parts to that, and I'm not saying this like it's news. I just want to set up the rest of the conversation. I can choose to forgive that person, but we might not be reconciled, of course. But first of all, I have to decide I'm done being judgmental about that. I'm done telling myself why they're bad or why they're terrible or how awful they were to betray me, because you know what? That's just taking up space in my head, and I'm tired of it. So I need to forgive them because I'm sick of carrying that weight around. Now, if they're also willing to meet me in that process, that's fine. We can have reconciliation. But if they don't, then I'm going to have to let them go. Now, Jesus said we're supposed to love our enemies. I've heard people give sickeningly sweet sermons about that. But nobody wants to acknowledge that Jesus was saying we'd have enemies.
I always thought about that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are people who do not have our best interest in mind, and that's what an enemy means from a godly perspective.
Okay.
And
that's,
I need to keep my
distance.
Yeah, and when somebody proves to me that they don't have my best interest in mind, then I need to keep my distance from them. But if I keep my distance from them while still telling myself they're bad, they're terrible, they're awful, trying to justify to myself why I'm so right to be so judgmental, see, that person still has control over me. If there's somebody who has proven to be not my friend and I need to create distance, I still need to ask that God find a way to heal them, that God find a way to touch their lives. I know it just can't be through me. And then I'm loving my enemies. I'm creating my distance that I need to keep myself safe, but I'm not letting myself get all twisted up in that tag plane where I have to keep proving to myself that I was right to let them go.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's another question, Glenn. I hope I'm interpreting this question correctly. An anonymous caller says, in premarital counseling, they tell you to respond, I hear you saying, but what if your significant other gets upset because they don't think you got it right, even though you're trying to defuse the situation?
You might not have gotten it right. So let's say you do that thing with the timeout that I talked about, that we go back in our corners and try and summarize what the other one said. So I'm going to come back to Glenn and say, hon, sorry I wasn't listening. I think you were just trying to say this. Now, it's important for me and Gwen to both understand, it doesn't matter if I got it right. It's not about being right, and I don't want her to judge me for whether I'm being right or wrong. I just want to think, hey, Glenn is trying to get it. And I want her to honor the fact that I'm trying to get it. So even if I come back and think, well, hon, I think you're just trying to say this, and she's like, well, she might say, yep, that's exactly right. She might say, well, no, that's not quite like that. It's more like this. Or she might say, well, Glenn, that's actually nothing to do with what I was saying. I was just trying to say this. Either way, now at the end of that conversation, I know what she's trying to say, and I need to be honored for the fact that I really am trying to get it. So if I say to my spouse, I think I know what you mean, and then I summarize as best I can, and they say, no, that's not it, I shouldn't be shamed for that. I should just be corrected. Here's what I actually meant. Okay.
All right, we're going to take a little break, but I do encourage you to keep the questions coming. A lot of great questions we're taking. 877-933-2484. You can call and speak to us live on the show. You can remain anonymous, of course. If you'd like to text me your question, it's the same number, 877-933-2484. Or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. My guest is Dr. Glenn Pickering, and if you go to his website, glennpickering.com, GlennPickering, he offers something pretty remarkable. If you would like to, you can schedule a free 20-minute consultation with him. Just click on the link and fill out the form, and you'll get in touch. We'll take a break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in my studio. And if you have just joined the conversation here, we are talking about relationships. And we started off talking about 50-50, where Glenn says that everyone's got their 50-50. So, Glenn, maybe the burning question that has not been asked is, how do I know what my 50% is?
That's a really great question, because usually we can tell what the other person's doing wrong.
Of course we can.
I so don't mean that sarcastically.
I know you don't.
Because it's happening right in front of us, so we can see that. And sometimes people think, well, I can see what they're doing wrong, but I don't care what my part of that is. And I always think, okay, here's two helpful just sort of rules of thumb. If I can see what my partner is doing wrong, then my part of that is the flip side of whatever that is. So if they're too passive, I must be controlling. Hmm. If they need all the attention, I must be really uncomfortable having people pay attention to me. If I feel like I'm doing all the work, they must feel like they can just never do anything good enough, and so they've kind of given up. I just have to ask myself, what would be the exact opposite side of what I'm seeing? And there's a very good chance that that's a pretty clear indicator of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes, though, you have to understand this. Oftentimes, it's always 50-50, but oftentimes one person's 50 is more obvious than the others. So, for example, Gwen and I both grew up in families that didn't teach us anything about dealing with anger effectively. My family dealt with anger by pretending we didn't have any, and her family dealt with anger by yelling, calling people names, throwing things, storming out for 2 hours later, and then coming back and pretending nothing happened. So, yeah, they're both honestly, they were equally effective, you know, in terms of actually ever resolving an issue.
Right.
And so one of the things then, if we start getting an argument, Gwen would get really loud, she might sort of come across harsh, she might say things she shouldn't say, and I just get really anxious and shut down altogether. Now, if a neutral person just watched that, they might say, oh, yeah, Gwen has a terrible problem with anger, blah, 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 because you can see what she is doing. But if you're really smart, you also have to notice what I'm not doing. I'm not staying in the conversation. I'm not speaking up for myself. I'm not saying what I really think. I'm not being a part of the solution. I'm not saying what I want. So, yeah, there are problems with what she is doing, but there are equally big problems with what I'm not doing. And sometimes if you're having problems seeing what your half is, you can ask yourself that helpful question, what is it that I'm not doing that would actually help move us towards resolution?
Mm-hmm. That's a brilliant point.
Thank you.
Yeah. What is the opposite of anger or reacting in anger?
It depends. And here's how come. Mostly what people call anger is not anger. Some of you might get frustrated about something. But that's not anger. Anger means you've done something that was hurtful to me, and anger gives me the energy to tell you that you need to stop doing that. Frustration just means there's something I want, and I can't find a way to get it. And sometimes when people get all disappointed, I see this in lots of relationships, and they don't like talking about being disappointed or sad or hurt because that feels too vulnerable, so they act mad. You came home from work late. I had supper all set. And they're actually really disappointed, of course. Then they start going off on a rampage like they're really mad.
Yeah.
So it's important to understand, first of all, a lot of times when people say they're mad, they're not. So I need to be clear about that. But if in a relationship one person often says things that are inappropriate, like when they're supposedly angry, and the other person tolerates that or stays in that conversation or gets all defensive, then you need to know that staying in that conversation or tolerating that or getting defensive are all ways of saying, this is an okay way to talk to me. But it's not.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, do you think that a lot of people that come into your office are living with some kind of emotional hangover all the time?
We all are, honest to goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, we all have stuff that we learn growing up that's helpful. We all have stuff that we learn growing up that's not helpful. And those things stick with us. Like, for example, you've heard me talk before about, you know, there are people in my family, including my mom, who are autistic, or she's passed away since then. But so nobody paid attention to me. So I grew up thinking I didn't matter, that I was practically invisible. So mm-hmm. even if I was in a group of people and we're just going to figure out where to go out to eat, and somebody says, hey, Glenn, where do you want to go? I sort of freeze up, I'd lock up because I wasn't used to having anybody pay attention to me, and I'd say something stupid. I'd go, I don't know, I don't care. Because I had that old habit of just having nobody pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. So then when people did pay attention to me, I literally didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we all have things like that we learned in childhood that were not helpful to us.
So how does the average person overcome that? I mean, you don't feel that way anymore, I would assume. If somebody says, Glenn, where do you want to eat? You instantly say the steakhouse, right?
That's right. Yeah. And I ask Bill to pay for it.
I know, but you do.
No, actually, I do sort of still lock up a little. I just don't let that stop me.
Okay.
Remember I was saying a second ago about that we all have that sort of first response, but I'm trying to teach people all the time who are my clients to go with what I call their second response. So I can still feel that part of me that locks up and wants to say, oh, I don't care. I just stop long enough to think, no, that's not what I actually think.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask God to help me come up with an answer that's actually true, so then I can say something that's actually true. Because,
mm-hmm.
see, I think we don't actually get over our stuff. We get better at recognizing it. We get better at not letting it run our life. We get better at letting God help us find better choices. But I think that sort of old knee-jerk reaction is probably going to be the same all over our life.
Mm-hmm. All right, Glenn, another listener, he or she would like to remain anonymous. How do you deal with a really angry person? This would be a sibling. Mm-hmm. Phone conversation starts out nice, but then they twist everything you say and they start raging at you. I have to say, all right, this has gone wrong, I love you, goodbye, and I disconnect.
I think that's probably a fine thing to do. But I might actually, it depends on how trusting I am with that sibling. How can I say? Some people do that raging thing because they're literally addicted to adrenaline. I believe it's the most common addiction in America, as you've heard me say before. So some people just look for a reason to do the rage thing because they love the feeling of that adrenaline rushing through their body. And it really doesn't matter what I say or do. We're still going to be in that conversation because that's actually their goal. I can't stop that, so I'm just going to hang up when it happens. Sometimes, though, people do that because they literally don't know how else to interact. And so before I decide I'm just going to start hanging up on you, I'm going to give them a chance to interact with me differently. So if they say some mean-spirited thing to me, I'm going to say, boy, that felt kind of harsh. There might be a grain of truth in what you said, but it came out so harshly.
Mm-hmm.
And give them a chance to say it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and again, if they actually want to have a relationship with me, they'll stop. They'll say, oh, yeah, that's probably true. And they'll just try again. And then I know, oh, you really were trying to have a conversation with me. Or they're just going to rage at me like, oh, blah, blah, blah. You just think, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I think, uh-huh. Okay, so you just like raging. And I think I need to go now.
Do you substitute anger for true, authentic vulnerability?
That's part of what I mean about when I said sometimes when people get sad or hurt or disappointed, they act angry, and then they're mad that the other person can't resolve it with them, except their true self is not showing up. So how is that person going to resolve it with you? Because your true self's not in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to ask myself that. What am I actually feeling right now?
Mm-hmm. How do you foster a relationship with a child who rages like that?
That kid clearly thinks they don't have any rules. And you need to ask yourself really, really clearly, what are the rules we have in our house, and do I actually enforce them or not? Because kids who rage think you're not going to, unless there's like a mental illness problem there. But in general, kids rage because they think now there's no rules.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I tell every parent is you have to have a rule for if they don't do the rule. So, for example, if I'm speeding down the highway, totally hypothetically, because of course I never would, but if I ever got pulled over and the highway patrol officer gives me a ticket, so as long as I just take the ticket, pay the ticket, that's all that happens to me. But if I think to myself, well, hey, I got the ticket anyway, so I'm going to rough up the officer while I'm at it because I'm mad, see, now a way bigger consequence is going to happen to me, right? Uh-huh. That's why nobody does that. So if I say to my kid, okay, you need to go to your room now and take a time out, and if you do that, that's fine. Then 2 minutes from now, you can come back. But if you don't, then this way bigger thing is going to happen. So they need to understand, if I say, okay, now you have to take a time out, and they think, okay, well, I've lost everything now anyway, so I might as well throw a tantrum. It's like, no, they need to understand there is going to be a bigger consequence. So I talk to parents all the time about how there has to be consequence for not accepting the consequence, and the kid has to be clear what that is, which is part of what I mean about having really clear rules.
Mm-hmm. All right, based on what you just said about the typical responses of the person who's on the receiving end of another's anger, how do you know when it's time to really say, enough is enough, and I'm not going to tolerate the way you typically over time speak to me, when the verbal abuse continues and they refuse to seek marriage therapy with you, and the child rages because he has watched the dad rage and get away with it?
That's actually seven questions, but I'll try and sort of take them as separately as I can.
Yeah, she got a Groupon, so that's why she asked all seven at once.
I love it. That's great. So if there's a person in my life that's angry and I start yelling about how I'm not going to take it anymore, I need to understand I'm dealing with their raging by raging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm literally committing the same sin that I'm mad about. So I need to understand that's A, not helpful, and it's not right. I need to be at a time when I'm not raging, say, hey, we have this pattern that we get into. Something happens. You get upset. I start getting all defensive. I really, really want us to find a better way to do that. And I'm going to invite you to go to counseling with me or do whatever we need to find a better way to do that while that's not actually happening. And if I can't do that during that time when it's happening because I have too much adrenaline going through my body, like I said, then I need to separate myself long enough so I can come back and have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Glenn, it's always a fast hour. As you know, it goes by quickly and there's still lots of questions. And I don't know how much time we have to get into any more questions, but some of our listeners have asked very difficult, challenging questions.
Yeah.
And if you go to glennpickering.com and you go down to the middle of the webpage, you will see an invitation from Glenn to connect with him for a consultation, which would last about 20 minutes, and you can get an opportunity to address your very specific question. I can see some of these are quite challenging, Glenn, and I don't know how well we could do in the time we have remaining, so I don't know if it's time to wade into any of them.
Well, we can do however you want to do it.
Yeah.
But I do love that you let people know that there is that 20-minute consultation, and I want the listeners to know, and I really like doing that. So some people are like, oh, he probably just thinks he doesn't want to do that. I don't want to be a bother. I just want you to hear loud and clear. That's not a bother to me.
Yeah.
I love getting those calls. I love being in those conversations.
Nice.
It's totally fun for me.
And I will say that, Glenn, I've known you long enough to know that the distillation process you have in your brain and the many, many, many times you have spoken to people, you can give pretty concise information pretty quickly.
Yeah, thanks.
So, I mean, 20 minutes in my world with you is like, you know, a lot of time.
Okay, cool.
Because a lot comes out of you in 20 minutes. You don't sit there and go, let me think about that. Your answers are swift, which is what I love. Anyway, Dr. Glenn Pickering has been my guest. If you go to glennpickering.com, GlennPickering.com, you can learn more about Glenn. His book on TAG is sensational. I've read it and given it out many times, and it's a good one. We're going to wrap up hour one now, but if you missed any of today's show, go to myfaithradio.com, go to the Afternoons with Bill Arnold page, and you can hear it from the beginning. Lots of good stuff in the show today. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, Vince Miller is going to be with me, and we're going to talk about masculinity. I hope he's out there, but we'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.